One, two, three, four. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Ryan Dyke, and today, for the first time ever, I will be your only host of the Spoils of Akron podcast. This here is a show about the art, culture, and the eccentric residents of the Rubber City. And I am joined today by one of those eccentric residents, Mr. J.T. Buck. Let's give it up for him, ladies and gentlemen. J.T., thank you for coming on the show today.
You're more than welcome, brother. How you doing?
I am doing good. You know, that's the first time I've ever had to play the intro song by myself.
That was a masterpiece.
You thought so?
That was...
I just came up with that. It's the same chords that Ben plays, but I did it a little bit differently because Ben is better.
You're the freaking Pavarotti of the baritone ukulele.
Thank you. That means so much to me because there's not a lot of people who use the baritone ukulele. Whenever you see, and I just saw this at Welch's, I think it's called. It's an ice cream stand out in Norton. Everybody has the tiny little ukulele. Is that a soprano? They have a soprano ukulele because it's tiny. It's, you know, when you see that, it's, that's what, when you say ukulele, that's what people think.
It's so cute.
If you tell a little kid, draw me a ukulele, they're going to draw you a tiny little ukulele. But when I bust out my baritone, people look at me and say, what is that? Because they don't know if it's guitar or if it's a ukulele. Because it's in the middle.
It's a guitar-lalele.
It's a guitar. I'm gonna start ukitar. Telling people that. A ukitar. I like that one better. A ukitar?
A ukitar.
I play the ukitar, ladies and gentlemen.
They were invented on the Yucatar Peninsula.
In Yucatar Peninsula and Peninsula?
In Peninsula. So it's right next to the glass gallery.
Where did they come up with the guitar lalele? Is there a place called Guitar Lalele?
I'm pretty sure there is.
I'm sure if we, like, let's, like, Google it. I'm sure there's something out there that's the Guitar Lalele.
What's Google?
Oh, gosh, JT, you got to catch up on the times, brother.
I know, I'm, like, you know, a lot.
Well, you're really, you even told me when we first started, you're like, Ryan, I am in a different mindset right now because you, good sir, are in writing mode right now.
I sure enough am, yes.
Yeah? So what are you writing? Can you give us a little snippet? What's going on?
Sure, I can talk to you a little bit about it. There's this little project I'm working on called The Devil's Milk Trilogy.
Okay.
Some of you out there in podcast land may have heard of this little project. The Center for Applied Theater and Active Culture is creating three original theater pieces that tell stories from the history of rubber.
Okay.
And so right now what we're doing for these next few months is creating and workshopping sort of early drafts or early versions of these three pieces.
Okay.
Co-artistic director Jairo Cuesta created the first one and workshopped it a few weeks ago, and a lot of people came to see it. His story that he tells is set in the Amazon. So I am working with the company to write and direct a story set here in Akron for part two of the Devil's Milk Trilogy. It takes place in 1913 in Akron.
That's a good year.
It's
1913.
A very crazy year in the life of this city. We won't get into it here because your poor podcast audience will just zone out. But when you see the show, you'll see.
Give me some highlights.
Oh, highlights! A massive flood.
Okay.
A labor strike.
Oh no.
And that happened at the same time.
Not good.
And just a whole lot of crazy stuff that went on during that time. So we decided to write a musical about it.
That's so cool.
Because nothing says singing and dancing like strike busting and
property
Easter,
damage.
Easter on Easter Sunday acts of God.
My basement's underwater.
We're drowning the workers.
Where are these shows put on? Where are they performed?
Katak is housed at the Balch Street Community Center, right there behind Krispy Kreme, for those of you who've never been
to the original Krispy Kreme.
The very first.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place for theater to because it's just so delicious.
When you get stressed, you just run outside and be like, I need a dozen. Give me a dozen.
Yeah, it's every time that little neon light goes on, you know they're handing out the free samples, and so it just keep driving. But what's really cool about it too is that, you know, I'm writing this story that took place, like, you know, just blocks from where we're performing it and where we're creating it. So every night when I go home from the theater, I drive past the cemetery where half the characters in the story are buried. And it's like, it's a really cool experience to do that. It's not a very, like, upbeat, toe-tapping kind of musical. It's a drama. But it's a story that I think a lot of people in Akron don't know actually happened.
So is it, it's a true, is it... real, it's real life people, but is the story you guys are just taking real names? It's inspired by true events. It's not actually what happened.
Yeah, you know, the way I describe it is that it started off like most musicals as an adaptation of a short story.
Okay.
And then in the research, more plot lines, narratives, yeah. other characters from actual history. So what I tell people, the long and short of it, is that everything in the musical happened, but none of it's true. Because we, you know, we change names, we merge identities. Yeah.
It's, what does that mean?
Take your time. It's okay.
Oh, I got it. Okay, I got it.
Fantastic. He's so smart. Gosh.
But it's happened at the Balk Street Theater.
Happened at the Balk Street Theater. So here's how we're doing this. This is really cool. We got first of all, I got to give a shout out to the Knight Foundation because they gave us a wonderful grant to be able to have this time to workshop, you know, with a professional cast. And so what we're doing first is opening up a series of open rehearsals to let people come in and hear early drafts of the script in progress. So we'll be doing the first round of those this coming week on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, the 28th, 29th, and 30th at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So try to make it out to those if you can.
Is that at the Balk?
It's at the Balk Street. Right. And it's a staged reading of about what I think is going to be about two-thirds of the finished product will be in the actors' hands. Got some phenomenally talented actors working on it. And so we'll do that, and then we'll do another round of open rehearsals in August where we'll have the material a little bit more fleshed out, with the goal then next year of being able to present like a fully staged production of the show somewhere in Akron, maybe several places.
And this is just part two.
There's still part three. The other artistic director of Katak and the Dual Performance Lab, Jim Sloviak, is actually going to be creating the third piece himself. And so maybe you could have him on in a few months. And
say his name one more time.
Jim Sloviak.
Jim Slovak?
Yeah, he's a theater professor at the University of Akron and is the co-artistic director of this company.
I'm going to try to remember that.
Good dude.
So at the Balk Street Theater, so the first part already happened, though.
Yeah.
Was it a good reception?
From all I can tell, it got an outstanding reception. I went to see a couple of the presentations of it, and, you know, Hyro's piece is a one-person show, so he was able to sort of, you know, work it to a more finished place for this first time around, and so the audience who came to see that got kind of like a more or less fully realized piece, and word of mouth spread, and I think that they were really turning people away from the door by the end of it. So, and it tells a really, really amazing story. So, the press on it was fantastic, and the word of mouth was great. So,
can you give
us
a little synopsis, or
well, I'm going to let Hyro talk about his own.
Let's do it. Okay.
You know, it does. What I can tell you is that it tells his piece tells the story of a guy living in the Amazon who is who's enlisted as a harvester of rubber early on.
I was gonna say, because as you said, it is the story of rubber, and I was, when you said the Amazon, I'm guessing, oh, that means there's got to be somebody who's down there mining it or trying to find it or to make it or whatever.
Yeah, it's basically a slavery kind of a thing. It's really, you know, and it's
for the family. It's uplifting. Right.
But that is the point, though, is that this is what we're doing with this piece. I think, really, at least this is my own perspective, and, you know, I'm only one of three artists who's primarily creating here, but for my perspective, what we're doing is taking a look at some of the crap in the Akron karma. You know, these are not all Akron sucks kind of stories, because, you know, I'm a big Akron fan. I love this city.
We are too.
Mm-hmm. You and Chris both, I mean, you guys love this city. So what we're trying to do is take a look at some of the dark side of the history of Akron, but not as a way to down the city, but as a way to kind of own our complete story and see what we can learn from it.
You have to learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely.
And as a city, we have to learn from our mistakes. We have to learn what we did right, what we did wrong, but most importantly, like they always say, you learn more from doing something, from a mistake, than from doing it right.
As the intro to the show today proved, it was.
Thank you, JT. Thank you so much. Get out of here!
There you go. Well, see, we have to make these jokes, though, because part of it is that, you know, these stories are very dramatic, and when you're in the middle of writing them, it's easy to get into kind of a tough spot, so like a dark place emotionally, which is fun to go to, but it's not fun for a podcast. So
no, you know, not I would think, but. I'm trying to think if there is any like podcasts I know of that they sit around and they read stories. I mean, mm-hmm. I know a couple that, I mean, of course, like The Moth, but mm-hmm. There's one that happens in L.A. I can't think of what it is, but mm-hmm. I think it's called The Blacklist, where they read old scripts of shows, movies that never were produced.
Oh, cool.
And some of them are really, really, like, dark, or, like, mm-hmm. they're horribly written, or they're just not funny, or it's like, this is a dumb idea, but you get to get a, but you get to get, you get to get a, like, a backstory on, like, you know, someone turns in 20 screenplays before one of them actually gets picked up. And as a writer yourself, I'm guessing you know that as well. You've probably written hundreds of hours of material, books filled, and you only want to put your best out there.
Absolutely. That's one of the advantages of doing live theater, actually, is that it's much easier to get a theater piece on somewhere in the world,
mm-hmm.
Because all you need really is a street corner and a, you know, the old adage of a plank and a passion. I was asked once by a teacher why I don't go into film, and I think the answer to that was twofold. One is, first of all, I'm totally not patient enough to work in film. I've tried,
it
and
it's,
it does. I'm too. My attention span is way too short. But then also, I like the idea. Maybe it's just I'm a child of instant gratification. But I like the idea. Like the way this workshop is working right now. Every day, I spend my whole day writing and revising and writing and revising. And then that evening, I get to walk into a rehearsal with six great actors, hand them the material, and bam, get to see it like right there in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that the immediacy of that process. It's more like working in television than film, where you have this fast turnaround. And I think that's one of the things I love about it the most. So.
When you started out in this, was it in high school?
Yeah.
When did the theater fire spark? When did you actually have an interest in it?
Oh, I can't totally remember, but it was early on. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, when you would do like a school play, or like a theater troupe would come to your school and do a performance, or you know, there was always just something kind of ineffable about that experience that it drew me and drew my attention much and my energy much more than sports or any of that other stuff. It just I've never really questioned why, you know. I just go with it because it's more like a love affair than it is like this is why I do theater.
I'll tell you what, I had no interest in it.
Really?
Growing up, I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't. I wanted to be Indiana Jones, or I wanted to be a firefighter. I did sports. I did student council. I did all that stuff. I didn't even go near theater.
How did that happen for you then?
For me, it happened. I was dating this girl, and
of
at
course.
Her church,
it
That's always
how
starts.
It always,
it always starts with a girl, and
well,
at her, at her, well, yeah,
depending, yeah,
at her church, they were doing a community show, and she was like, "Let's be a part of it," and I was like, "I don't want to be a part of it," so we were a part of it, and so she made us be a part of it, and I'm so happy she did. From there, I met so many amazing people. I met my bassist in my band, Mark Brown, he's become one of my good friends, and he introduced me to Antic in the Falls, and I went up there and got Jekyll and Hyde in my first ever stage show, and that was 3 years ago, and the spark has been ignited in me, and I would not be sitting right here if it wasn't for Mark Brown extending an invitation, telling me, come try out for the show. I wouldn't have met Ben. Oh, I wouldn't have went to Dynamics. I wouldn't have met Ben. We wouldn't have had this idea. I would never have met Chris because I started, I met Chris through Benji, and I met Benji through the EP Cooker, and I only started going to the EP Cookers because Ben and I were part of a band because of Mark Brown. It all goes back to Mark Brown. But I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for the generosity of one man.
Well, Mark Brown, if you're listening.
Seriously, I love that man.
You just got nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Here on the Spoils of Akron. It's great. Well, you raise a really great point here, Ryan, and that is the person-to-person nature of this art form. I mean, You know, for a kid like me, I mean, I was raised kind of like a pretty much an only child, and kind of like, you know, in a neighborhood where I didn't have a lot of other kids around. So, so there was this. It was the one-on-one nature of the arts that really drew me. Like, how often do you go see a movie because you responded to a television ad or a YouTube ad or something? But versus somebody calls you up and says, "Hey, let's go. You know, Jurassic World is opening next weekend. Let's go."
Yeah.
You know, and I think theater, because our marketing budgets are smaller and because our, you know, we're more like handcrafted and homemade, we find our way into it by these personal invitations, and it becomes, you know, about family, and it becomes about just as much about friendships as it does about the arts. And I actually think that's wonderful. And the reason why I'm responding to this, I think, is because we just had the Theater Communications Group conference up in Cleveland. You know, the TCG is like the big service organization for the theater industry, and it was an amazing weekend. But so many of the, like, the breakout sessions and the workshops and the conversation in this thing, it was like the entire industry is rediscovering that, you know, the way to make the arts meaningful to people has everything to do with developing deep one-on-one personal relationships with the artists and with the audience. And so, you know, institutions everywhere are saying, "Oh, our traditional marketing isn't working. How do we, you know, how do we reach people?"
It's marketing's different. Marketing's to the internet now.
Right. It's marketing. It's
How can I get you interested? I don't care about trying to get the other 20 people behind you interested. You're first in line. I want to get you here. I want to get your butt in the seat.
Right. And then furthermore, why? You know, is it just because you want my ticket money, or is it that you actually care about me as a person? And I think that, you know, that whole question just is a game changer for how theaters run and for how we promote our work, because it isn't all of a sudden about just getting ticket buyers to come give us buckets of money. It's about, you know, the people in the audience are your friends, and they're people you care about. Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't be telling these stories to try to move them.
Right? You know,
and I love that.
You speak so highly of theater, and it almost makes me think of actually one question that we love to ask people when they come in. You know, with so much knowledge about theater and the steps you've taken and how much of a passion and a fire you have for it, why Akron?
That is a great question. And that's a deep question.
Mm-hmm. Let it soak in. Because we like to ask people that. Because being
soaking it.
So into theater, you know, you could try New York, you could try LA.
Chris gets it. He's sitting across the table laughing because he remembers this commercial.
It's just something, you know.
Madge, you're soaking in it.
For me personally, I've lived in the city my entire life. I went to school here. I grew up here. I graduated from Coventry, Summit County, whatever. But I've lived in the city. I know all the back roads. I can get from here. Mm-hmm. I can get from Kenmore to Stowe on back roads. I love this city. And for me, the reason why I want to stay here is because it's starting to flourish.
Yes.
There's the music coming out of here. I'm happy to be a part of the music scene. Comedy, I'm also happy to be a part of with my improv troupe. I'm happy to be a part of that. Podcasts, you know, when we started this, three other podcasts started. I mean, they started first, but like within like a month, three different Akron podcasts started. So it's just all this stuff's happening, and that's why I've chosen. So now that I've letting it soak into your pores and let you really think about that question, why Akron?
I now feel slightly dirty, I have to tell you. I think I need to go take a shower now. Just like grungy, like it's worked its way into
my skin. I'll wait here.
Why Akron? Well, look, all the reasons you said. I can talk a little bit about I just turned 37, and I've been doing this for the better part of 20 years now, and it's different now than it was when I started doing this. Akron has changed in many ways, especially for the arts and culture, quite a lot. Technology's changed, social media's changed. When I was in high school, doing a podcast like this was a virtual impossibility because of the gear. When you had to go book studio time in a professional studio to do this stuff, and here we are in a professional studio, but the gear is such that the folks with smaller budgets or independent artists can have access to it. And that's a game changer. The way music technology works, the way theater technology works. So, but back to why Akron. I'm one of these people who has left Akron several times.
Wow.
And I come rolling back. I usually go for a few months or a couple of years.
I didn't know that you've ever left.
Oh yeah.
Where have you gone?
Well, I've done New York. I've done Houston. I've done Portland, Oregon. And probably a couple of other places.
Not Portland, Maine.
That would be fun. Get the two Portlands.
Only live in Portlands.
And all the cities are great. They really are fantastic. And I've learned a lot everywhere I've gone. But Akron has this balance of you can afford to live here.
It was named.
Yes.
What was that? 13th on the list.
Something like that. I think it could be. It could be more though.
I think maybe it was. It was like one of the most affordable cities in the U.S.
You can thrift here. All the other places I've lived, like where are the thrift stores? All right, but you can thrift here and get good stuff. So you can afford to live here, and we're a couple hours away from like 6-7 major cities.
Yeah.
Got all these museums, orchestras, theater companies, concert venues, art galleries, and the artists themselves. And this is the other thing, is that the artists themselves. I'm working with some of the best actors right now I've ever worked with, and I've worked with people who have Tony Awards on their desk, and I'm not going to name them, and I've worked with people who don't. And I'm telling you right now, from New York to Houston to everywhere else I've been,
to Portland, to
both of the Portlands, and some places I don't want to mention because they're scandalous and scary, but. Out of everywhere I've been, I have access to some talent here as a writer to help bring the work to life, and I have administrators and everybody from the grant writers all the way over to the stage managers are really excellent, smart people living in a place where you can afford to live, and I've got this cab driver's this townie's knowledge of the city, it's home, and. So finally, I just finished the coursework toward another master's degree, and as I'm like transitioning back out of school and into the quote-unquote real world again, I'm discovering all over again that there are opportunities here to work and to live and to do things that in a balance where I'll sum it up this way. I talk to my friends in New York, and every time I do, it's like I ask them what they're doing, and basically it comes down to they're waiting tables and taking auditions. And
Julie Holiday said the same thing last episode. She spent 4 years in LA and was a waitress for 3 of them.
And there you go. And here in Akron, ever since I've come back from my most recent trip to New York and back, what I do every day is I play the piano, I write, I direct, I work in theater offices. But everything that I do professionally and for fun has centered around making the art. I've not had to flip a single burger in 18 years.
Wow.
And only in Akron, I think, and maybe a very few other places could I have the career that I've
had. Do you do the Gaines meetings at all?
I want to. It's like you remember how you were talking a minute ago about the multiple podcasts that you're on? Well, the other thing that's happened is that there is now officially too much stuff going on in Akron to keep track of. And I look at my Facebook feed every day and it's like, you've got 26 events today and there's no way I can get to all of them, but yes. I would if I could. There's just so much cool stuff. And the Gaines stuff, Sabrina is somebody who I've run into several times and I love what they're doing, and I have rehearsal.
I know. Wednesday nights are always Copper Penny's practice. And we have 3 huge shows coming up. So
Isn't it fabulous to have so much stuff going on?
I love it. Okay, do you get the Facebook notifications that says, you have 4 events coming up today? You get those too?
Yes.
Okay, I was just thinking, why is Facebook harassing me? But I love it when it does that, because then I swipe on it, and I see all the stuff that's going on today, and I get to, when I get out of work, because I work 6 to 2 every day, I unlike you, I have not gotten to that point where I can live off my art.
You will quickly.
Thank you. Yeah. That means a lot to me, because you're not the first person that have said that.
Well, I've talked to your boss where you work now, and they
talked to my uncle?
I'm just kidding.
But
I have no idea who this
guy is. I get out of work at 2 every day, and at 2, or 3 if I get overtime, woohoo! At 2 or 3, whatever, when I get off of work, I get to look, usually is already planned, but
some days I get to think, what do I want to do today? Mm-hmm. I don't have to just go home and sit on the couch. I could if I want. I love those days. I love going home and watching my movies or catching up on video games or whatever. But I get to think, today, what have I got to do? Today, I get to come record a podcast with local writer JT Buck. Mm-hmm. Or tomorrow, what do I get to do? Well, tomorrow, I get to go do this. Friday, our own Chris Miller right here is hosting free outdoor movies at Waters Park for refugees.
Which is
day.
Like the coolest park ever. It's yeah. like one of the coolest parks in Akron.
It's just, there's so much going on.
It's like a big vending machine where that's stocked with all your favorite crap. And you're sitting there, you're standing there looking at it and going,
the spoils of Akron and a vending machine.
You know, do you want the Crunch Bar, or do you want Actors Summit today, or do you want the Zebra Martel Gallery?
I mean, then it depends on how much money I have to put in my quarters to see how much I get out.
And that's the other thing, another reason why Akron is because of the cost of the stuff. You know, you can go see a show here, a concert here, for a fraction of the cost of seeing it in a larger city sometimes. I think more often than not. I mean, almost everywhere you go, there's
Blossom.
Like, Blossom. You know, there's accessibility everywhere. Yeah. Even the Akron Symphony has
You get huge, huge artists that come through. Fall Out Boy, Wiz Khalifa was just here like last Tuesday. Huge artists that come through all the time.
So it's fantastic. It's just, it's always a feast, you know. It makes me want to go get a Crunch Bar.
Afterwards, we'll get some.
Yeah.
So, JT, another thing that I wanted to ask you was, since you have grown up and you have moved away and you have found yourself coming back multiple times, do you always, and this, you know, you don't have to say specifically, do you always move to the same area? Have you lived in different parts of the city?
No, yes and no. I usually bounce back and forth between, there's my childhood home that has been in my family for like 40, 50 years, and I just sold it actually about a month ago. And that's located in a really cool neighborhood, actually the same neighborhood where my musical is set. And I sold it for a whole lot of reasons. It was just time to kind of let that particular piece go, but that's kind of in the South Street, Grant Street area. And I would love to actually come back into that neighborhood in a year or two, maybe, and buy a house and flip it, because that neighborhood has a lot of potential.
Yes.
But I also, of course, like a lot of artsy types, I love living on the West Side. So right now I kind of live in this really cool old house right at the top of the Glendale steps. I'm not going to tell you which house because I don't want you all stalking me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've looked out my window and seen some pretty crazy stuff.
Hey, you know what? I'm just going to post it on Instagram or something. JT's house.
We'll talk about the goats at some point, but I'm living in this old Akron, you know, house overlooking Glendale Cemetery, and I'm halfway between downtown, the university, and Highland Square, so it's a pretty sweet place to live. But you know what, there's a lot of great neighborhoods in Akron, and I think some of these walking tours that y'all have seen that we've been on, we are really starting to show people, hey, this place is kind of cool.
You know, our own Liz Tyron of the Spoils of Akron podcast and Urban Eats Musica, she wants to start doing an idea of coffee walks where you walk to the different coffee bars or whatever.
There you go.
Here's one thing that I want to ask you also, because you are older than I am, but you are
by a day or two.
You know, a couple of day and an hour. Yeah. So, JT, come on now.
Yeah, right.
You have seen this city transform. Mm-hmm. You have seen the city take its baby steps, and now it's up walking. At some point, we're going to be running, but right now we're walking. We're getting to that point. We're in our infancy. How are the neighborhoods changed? I mean, just West Side up there, or did I say that right? No. Where we just had Better Block. Oh, no. Did I say that right?
North Hill.
Oh, gosh. Why couldn't I think of that? But North Hill, just that area right there, in the four years since I've moved out of my parents' house, I've lived in three different locations. Mm-hmm. One of them was going to be over at North Hill, and I decided at that point I was going to move to the Falls. I just wanted to be in that area. But when I was over there, it was much different than it is now. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's thriving. You get, you know, not just with a lot of the refugees, you know, sadly that we have, not just sadly, but that are coming here and seeking haven in our city, and they're bringing their culture, and that's awesome. I love like this little melting pot that we have, this little mini melting pot we have, but just the different cultures and the different groups of people that have moved in. How has it changed for somebody who's actually seen the city grow?
Well, look, it's a great question. The current real story of transformation, I think, is North Hill in the city. That's the neighborhood, because of Better Block and some other things, like the rest of the city is now paying attention to this like vibrant, diverse culture that's sort of evolved on North Hill. And you know, North Hill has always been an immigrant neighborhood. It's just the immigrants have changed. But that's where it's interesting to see that, you know, like the most exciting places in the city are the places where the immigrants are building a culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the cooler things. But in my lifetime, the biggest transformation has been downtown. Okay, when I was, actually before I was your age, I was born in the late 70s, and so I spent my childhood years riding my bike down Main Street when almost everything down here was completely boarded up and empty. And you could get into a whole lot of trouble climbing rusty fire escapes like Dave Giffords wrote about in his book, and you know, and like, you know, when the canal was half covered over and completely filled with trash. And you know, and so to watch downtown and the university area, I mean, and the university.
Oh, yeah, total, oh gosh.
You know, I did my bachelor's degree at Akron during the years that they were rebuilding half the campus, and so it was a giant mud pit the entire time. But to see the way the heart of the city has completely and totally had this renaissance that's still going on. And so North Hill is now going through that, and I think there are other neighborhoods that will go through that. You know, Highland Square continues to develop in ways that, I mean, I remember back in the days when we were all fighting just to keep Taco Bell out of Highland Square.
Yeah.
But now there's this
mustard seed.
The mustard seed and this new building for, you know, across the street from Angel Falls. And so yeah, Dave Giffords talks about the slow, steady upward grind that the city has been on, and that's been the story of my lifetime in this town. And I think that there are a couple of neighborhoods coming up that are poised for it. I think that whole area between like South Street and Grant down to Firestone Park is very much poised in the next few years to be that neighborhood, especially with the business district and everything. And there may be, you know, Kenmore. What's really exciting is the way Akron people are starting to really shake off the identity of we're the city that used to be the rubber capital of the world and now we suck, to taking pride in their local identities and their neighborhoods and kind of proclaiming this is a place and it's a good place and an important place. And that takes me back to why I'm writing the Goosetown Project, because I believe, you know, it's called the Goosetown, it's called Goosetown, this musical that I'm doing for the Devil's Milk trilogy. And it's set in the old immigrant neighborhood, the German neighborhood in Akron, that used to be the German neighborhood, which sits halfway between the university and what we now know as Firestone Park. It's that Grant Street, South Street kind of area that's sort of neither zone between the university and Firestone
Park.
Okay. I'm writing it.
That's so. Is there any like remnants? Is there any old shops or buildings or family owned restaurants or anything out there?
I mean, some of the highlights I can point to are like the Burkhart Brewery complex where Aqueduct is now and Thirsty Dog. You know, that's been a brewery since the mid 1800s, and right there on that location, there's this. You know Wolf Ledges Parkway. Well, that's named after this old ravine that used to run across the neighborhood from behind the brewery over to Spicer Street that got filled in.
I was going to say, and when you say old ravine, that means that it's not there anymore.
It's
which
not
means
there
how do you get rid of a ravine?
You fill it in with debris until it's full. And you can see the remnants of it behind Aqueduct, like the rock walls by the parking lot. But you know, there's a stream that runs underneath, runs through that ravine and runs underneath that building that was originally the source for the water for the beer. So there's this whole idea identity from that neighborhood that goes from the, like the mid-1800s to the mid-1900s, a name for the neighborhood and an identity and a story that I think in the last 20, 30 years has gradually dissipated. So what I'd like to do is remind my old neighborhood that it has this immigrant story, it has this identity and this brand to it. And when you know your story, you have a place to come from, and you have you're all of a sudden a part of something that
that's,
you didn't know.
That should be like a motivational poster. Say that again. When you know your story,
I can't remember what I just said.
When you know your story, how you said it was like when you know your story, you know you have something to do. You have a place.
Yeah, you have a place. You're a part of something.
Yeah.
And I found that writing, researching, and writing this Goosetown story from the 1900s.
You found your part.
You find an identity there, and you find motivation and inspiration from a place that you never thought you would find one before. It's kind of interesting to me that it's now in my mid to late 30s that I'm like rediscovering the neighborhood. I'm rediscovering the neighborhood I grew up in.
Going through a renaissance of your own.
Yeah, well, this is the neighborhood I grew up in, and I just never knew. You know, I just never knew that this was a place, and the people are fascinating, and So yeah, it's just a lot of fun.
You know, I grew up in Kenmore. I grew up over by, and it was on. We talked about it on the first episode. The, you know, where the old Ryder Dairy cow was on top of the roof.
Yeah,
I grew up right there on the border of Kenmore to Barberton.
Gotcha.
I went to school in Kenmore, then I went up to the Falls, and then I finished in Coventry. But I mean, I lived in the same house my entire life. Mm-hmm. Until I finally moved out or got kicked out. You can ask my parents. It differs back and forth. But, you know, I lived there my entire life.
Chris, I'm voting that he got kicked out.
Totally. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I lived there my entire life, and I didn't... Not my entire life. At some point, you know, I never knew there was a trolley that ran up Kenmore Boulevard.
Yeah.
Until, like, my father finally... Not finally, but until I was added to the I grew up in Kenmore page, mm-hmm. that they're all over on Facebook. I grew up in Akron. I grew up in the Falls. Whatever page. I didn't know that middle section where the grass is right now and where they have trees, there was a trolley that ran up there. And much like in downtown Akron, there was a trolley that ran down Main Street. Mm-hmm. And just all this old history and this rich history that... You know, at some point, and I'm so glad we were talking about this, because I want somebody, I've always wanted to bring someone on the podcast and talk with them about the city and the infrastructure and how that relates to the art and how the city, we have all these different, I'm doing hand motions, mm-hmm. we have all these different roots.
It's like Mariah Carey over here with the hand motions.
We have all these different, I like to think of it like a tree.
Yeah.
Okay, think of a tree and how it all comes to one point. Mm-hmm. But underneath there, you have all these roots coming from all these different communities, mm-hmm. cultures, arts, groups of people in different parts of the city, and how it all comes into one place. Mm-hmm. We're all one city. And then how it branches back out for the entire world to see. Mm-hmm. Not just with our music. I mean, of course, Devo always came from here. But now that the Black Keys came from here, I think it sparked... Not just them specifically, but of course they helped. Mm-hmm. A change in the music scene, you know. And now that we've gotten, LeBron James, just a kid from Akron.
LeBron, Devo, Black Keys. Every time those a phenomenon like that comes along, it inspires several hundred other people in Akron to pick up the basketball or to pick up the guitar.
That's what I mean. And that's think of the branch. Scene, think know, of the branch.
Partially.
LeBron's the branch, and then he sparks all these people, all these twigs, all these different sticks that grow off of it, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And
yeah.
I mean, it's just awesome.
Look, I was having a conversation, I think maybe about a week or so ago, with a friend of mine who's a little bit more like cynical by nature. Okay, that's just this
we all have that friend.
Yeah, and sometimes depending on my state of alcohol consumption, I can be that friend. But
we're having you back on drunk one time.
Oh,
JT.
I can't wait.
We're gonna have a drunk pal. Drunk cast.
I'll tell you what. Let me finish this job search I'm on first. Let me land a gig somewhere, and then we'll let her.
Why should I hire you? Because I'm the best around.
Because I am phenomenal. You shouldn't hire me. I suck. No. I've got this friend who's kind of cynical by nature, and he was like trying to bring me down off my cloud on a day of writing, and he was like, "Who cares? Who cares about all this history that was 100 years ago? So what does it mean to me now?" And I said, dude, just a couple of days ago, I was telling one of these stories, and your eyes, I said something about, I can't remember what it was now, but I said some sort of detail, but like what you were talking about with Elsie the cow, or the trolley down Kenmore Boulevard. It's like, I said that, and for just a minute, you lit up, you got inspired, you got some energy, and, so what would happen if we told more of these stories? And you have more of those aha moments. Might that energy, that chi, kind of bubble up to a point where you maybe go and do some research, or look up something, and then all of a sudden it's sort of that little spark then lights a little flame, and then that becomes you maybe looking at some different possibilities for what you're doing with your life. I mean, I know that, if you had asked me 30 years ago that would I be getting up every day like obsessed with writing, with pouring my heart out into this musical theater piece about the neighborhood I grew up in, I would look at you like you were like stoned high and off of another planet. But here I am doing it, and it turns out that the story that I'm telling actually might be very meaningful to a lot of people on a lot of levels. I know it has been to me, but the story has totally changed how I look at my life. You know, like writing this piece has totally changed me as a person and my worldview. And that
how do you feel different?
Well, that's one for my therapist. Let me tell you.
Oh, okay.
I'll circle back to that. But I guess what I'm saying is that you start by having these conversations where you go, huh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. And you never know. Just a few weeks or a few months later, it could lead to like some sort of important like personal revelation for you that becomes an inspiration for a better life. And that's what it ultimately really comes back to is just more life, more energy, more caring more about where you live and where you are. And there's still so many people out there, I think, who are bored on a daily basis and who are uninspired and who are looking for something more in their life. And this kind of pursuit that we're talking about here really is what leads to that. It's what grounds you in a story, in a place, and gives you the energy to go on. So, I know that's kind of like my Oprah talk for the moment, but I think that's
important. Do I get a free TV?
You
get a TV. You get a TV. You get a TV.
And I just keep
Chris and I are the only two people in the room. So, Chris, get a TV.
Woo! Oh, crap. I have to go get a TV.
Yes!
What's a TV? I haven't had one.
Oh, JT.
But you asked me real quick how it's changed me. I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. But, to a certain extent, we are how we look at the world. That's, that's who we are. And I, over the last couple of years in writing this project, I have become more and more and more and more and more aware of the complexity of everybody that I meet. I mean, I tend to be, like a lot of artists, a pretty opinionated cat, but I've noticed that, like, I just whenever somebody ticks me off, somebody cuts me off in traffic, somebody just says something that grates me the wrong way, more and more I'm catching myself reacting to that inside my own head and going, I wonder what's really going on with that person, okay, rather than just retaliating out of a sense of like you jerk, because the history is so complicated and these particular characters are really fascinating and elaborate people. But it's also changed how I look at Akron. I look at Akron as being a much richer place, and this has kind of become my mantra: is that creativity is wealth in and of itself. It's not money, but it's wealth. And where its wealth is that it brings you more life.
Okay.
Even if you're dirt poor, have no money in your pocket, if you're a creative person, if you have access to being able to make to write a song, play a ukulele, write a poem, you can have a rich day, just by creating something. And that to me is incredibly powerful. I think if more people in Akron really knew the riches they were sitting on, this city would totally go to the next level. It's a good place now, but I think there's still a lot of people out there who don't know that they're rich.
You're sitting on a gold mine.
I'm sitting on it, and
it's free. They don't have to do it. That's the thing. This leads to my next question. I want to get into this. Everyone's had a journey, and I want you to walk me through. You don't have to go every step.
So now I come
to
you with open eyes. You can't say journey around me, okay?
to get to this point, to get to where you are today, where you are financially stable, where you are sort of, you can wake up every day and do what you love.
Yeah.
I want you to walk me through, because I'm guessing there's going to be people listening to this that it's going to, like you said, when you have a conversation with somebody and you hear that talk and you hear that, you can branch out, you can be, when you get that spark,
right.
I'm guessing, we have a lot of young viewers, listeners as well. I get to see the graphs and if people really do tell the truth about their iTunes account and how old they are, whatever. But, there are plenty of young people out there that I've worked with, either through theater or through comedy or music. Just some of the kids that, for my band, we get a really, really unique and diverse group. We get families, and dad comes, and dad, we play at Giant Eagle was probably our biggest show. And Dad,
love me some Giant Eagle. That market
is it's so great. And there's a huge room upstairs where they have live music.
Right.
And Dad and Mom bring the kids, and the kids sit with their friends, and they get to watch and dance and have fun. Well, Mom and Dad gets to sit back, maybe go grab something from the bar downstairs, do whatever. And it's such a unique environment that we have. But what I love about it is I love the little kids, and I love watching them getting up and dance, because that's how I became interested myself in music. I didn't, you know, in high school, I didn't play any instruments. I have only been playing the drums for about 3 years now. And what sparked me into that was, and I'm going to show some of my true colors, but at my church, I would go to my church, and it's actually my uncle. It all comes back to my uncle, too. he plays the drums for the church, and I love watching him. And I always tell people, like, they say, where did you learn to play drums? I say, it's 50-50. 50% I learned from watching my uncle. The other 50%, my buddy Jay taught me how to do a simple 1-2-3-4 beat. And from there, I'm to the point where I'm right now that I can listen to a song and figure it out myself. But I learned to love music and learned to play by dancing. I go to a very non-traditional church, and it's non-denominational, and we get up and dance, and they pray in tongues, and it's crazy wild. But I learned to love music by dancing. And when I see little kids, I'm gonna cry. I'm getting emotional. When I see little kids dancing to our music, it makes me think of how many of those sparks, how many of those kids that want to go, that are going to go home and say, Mom, Dad, can I have a drum set? I want to do that. And, you know, some of it's for that I love being on stage. I'm a performer. Whether it's whatever stage it's on, I love being in front of people and making them laugh or swoon or cry or whatever. But I love that feeling of how many people have I inspired. So JT, I want you, we're going to finish up here for the last couple of minutes. I want you to tell me what your journey, you know, and we've been talking here, and this has been an amazing conversation. This has been one of the best, you've been one of the best guests we've ever had on. I really do think so. You're the first one that's almost made me cry. Except for Liz. Liz was really mean.
I think I heard that podcast, and
you know, walk me through, just as you can, the different, maybe some events that happened or something like that. You know, be as nonchalant. Be as, you don't have to be as descriptive as possible, but let's tell me and tell the listeners some things that have sparked the interest in your life, and maybe it'll spark something in theirs.
Well, look, I think one of the things that you and I have in common is that the church has been an incredibly important part of our artistic journey, as is a lot of people. I mean, you know, all the way back to the dawn of time, all right? You know, Michelangelo, you know, no slouch, you know, as artists. You know, so...
he's kind of important.
Kind of important, yeah. But you know, the church, faith communities of all, you know, religions and denominations, and certainly my own faith tradition these days doesn't fit squarely into anybody's typical box. But you know, those are incredibly important neighborhood locations that are safe spaces for people to learn, and that's so certainly the work that I've done within four churches has been an incredibly powerful, you know, part of my life. There are two things that I want to talk about in response to your question.
Okay.
One of them is that, you know, for several years I had a little community-based arts program over at First Grace Church, which is now, you know, going through some transitions. But one of the bigger projects that we did there was this. There's this musical called Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens, and I've been talking about this a lot lately because it just keeps coming up as like a prime example of the kind of thing that I love the most about the arts. It's a musical that was written by a New York-based playwright.
Say it one more time.
It's called Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens.
Okay.
And it's this Spoon River anthology-like cycle of songs and monologues that are based on some of the panels in the AIDS quilt, you know, the big AIDS quilt that's based in Atlanta. And it's a really powerful, uplifting, you know, piece of theater. So we decided to do this and enlist for the cast of it, you know, 30-some readers, some who were, you know, never been on stage before in their life, some were, you know, drawn from the local theater scene, and then, you know, there were people like Russ Pry and other, like, civic leaders who were involved in that, and then we got some musicians and some singers together to handle the music, through a connection, who's a mutual friend of the playwright. We were actually able to bring the author in, and do, like, some master classes, and he got to work with the actors, so which was way cool. And it was done as a benefit for Canopy, for Community AIDS Network, what used to be called the Community AIDS Network. And so it was for, you know, neighborhood constituents in a way. So here we had just this big old honking community piece that was uplifting and moving, and it was done very much on the fly. It wasn't tons of rehearsal. It wasn't touched on tons of money going into it to create it. It was just this big, gigantic collaboration. And to me, it typified everything that I love doing about the arts, because it was multiple art forms in one. It was telling stories across multiple levels and strata of society. You know, it wasn't just, you know, an evening at the symphony. It was like it was a diverse and cross-sector kind of collaboration. And I love the fact that art can open up neutral territory in a city that empowers all sides, you know, no matter what your role might be outside of the arts. If you come to an art project that's constructed right, it can be a powerful way to form those kind of relationships and to tell stories, you know, in a flat earth kind of way. The other thing that I want to get into that I think is illustrative for some of your younger listeners is that, you know, I've had some really great highs and lows over the last 20 years. And I think everybody in life goes through that, and especially in the arts, because I've never been a wealthy guy at all. I don't go home at the end of the night and roll around in a vat of money. I always do. And it's feast or famine. You know, sometimes I'm cashing, you know, five-figure checks, and sometimes I'm scraping pennies. And it's always been that way. But you know, I went through a period in my life when I was not a terribly old guy. This was just about 5-6 years ago, where I had a really traumatic year. Both of my parents passed away in the same year. The funding for my program at First Grace got cut, and I was no longer there. And I had some personal health issues that cropped up at the same time. And it was just like the year from hell, you know? And every once in a while, everybody goes through a time in their life when life just comes at you a little too fast, yeah. You know? And so by the end of that year, I was just as down as I could possibly be. And I had to take some time and step back and sort of recuperate from all of that. But I couldn't just not work, because you got to keep a roof over your head. You know, mm-hmm. you got to eat. So, but I will tell you that this community, the artists who I've worked with in this community, the organizations I work with, were so good to me during that time. I mean, I still managed to find enough work to keep the lights on, barely, and find projects that were, you know, art isn't therapy, but it's therapeutic, you know, and to find projects that were meaningful and not too incredibly stupid to work on, that I didn't feel like I was wasting my time, and I felt like I was doing something meaningful, and they put up with my crazy during that time. They put up with me not being the best version of myself all the time, because I was grieving and because I was dealing with just a lot of crap. And so there were days when I was just, you know, not a fun guy to be around. But, you know, the artists in this community and the organizations in this community who make the magic happen really propped me up during that time. And and I think that is the community that we live in. You know, I guess my message to your younger listeners is that if you get out of your house and go to work, and keep showing up and keep at it, keep putting one foot in front of the other, one word after another, one brushstroke after another, you will turn around and look back over a 10, 20-year period and go, I'm an artist, and I'm doing it. And there were so many times when I thought I wasn't going to be able to do it, but I just kept going, and it worked out. And Akron, you know, this goes back to your brilliant question, Ryan, why Akron? Akron is big enough that we can have opportunities as artists all over the place to make work. And very often we have to make it ourselves, right? But we can. And that's the other thing. Unlike New York right now, where it's so expensive to even breathe, I'm surprised they don't charge it, you know, just for oxygen in that city anymore. Here you can afford to be broke. you know, and live if you're willing to slum it for a while. And you don't have to you don't have to make gazillions of dollars just to keep the lights on here. You can get by, and that means everything to an artist, because the art doesn't always pay. You know, sometimes you do have to do things that aren't, you know, too fun to make the money, but you can do it here and still stand a pretty reasonable shot of having enough time and energy to make the art. So so that's been my journey. You know, I'm leaving out some of the uglier parts too.
Of course.
But, you know,
of course.
But Akron has been a great place to take risks and to fail and to rebound. And so I can't thank Akron enough for that. I'm a very grateful dude these days for all that. So there you go. That's it.
Well, JT, I have to say, we're going to close up here. But first thing I want to do, of course, we like to throw out events and promotions,
yes,
and stuff coming up. And if you want to pull out your list, I know that you have some, you said earlier this, what is it, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday? That you have your reading going on of your play.
Yeah, 28th, 29th, 30th, 7 p.m. at the Balch Street Auditorium, right there on the Balch, right behind the Krispy Kreme. And then
I want Krispy Kreme.
The glazed. So, and the other thing that's going on, I haven't mentioned this, and I probably should, but it's like the project that's almost over with now. But one of my regular gigs is that I've been very often the music director for the musicals at Actors Summit over at Greystone Hall here in downtown over the last few years. A great little theater company. They're doing Always Patsy Cline right now, which if you love some good old country music, you know, Patsy was amazing, and starring the incredible Jennifer Browning as Patsy Cline. She will knock your socks off. And the equally amazing Shonda Porter as the other the character Louise, who it's a two-person musical. But it's a great show. It's one I've done a couple of times. Actors Summit has put together a fantastic production of it. I get to just sit back there and play the piano for it every night. It's going so well that they extended it by 2 weekends.
Wow.
So you've got this week, this coming weekend, and it's playing through July 5th, Friday, Saturday nights, and Sunday afternoons. Go to actorssummit.org or Google Actors Summit and give them a call, and come see the show, because it really is, first of all, you're discovering Jennifer Browning, which I think is, she's a singer that every human being needs to know.
I think she, didn't she just do another show before this? I swear I've seen her name.
You've seen her name. She's starting, we're finally getting her out into the musical theater world, because she needs to be singing, and you know, she does a lot of classical stuff. She sings with a couple of, there's another band that she sings with, and she's just amazing. So, she's doing the Goosetown thing with me. She's an old friend, and I love working with Jen. So, so those two projects are going on right now, and if you're bored this next couple of weekends, come on out and hang out with me. I'm sometimes depressing, but never boring.
So. I don't think so. No, JT. I'm gonna finish up here.
I'm gonna
throw out some of my own events. Or not my own, but some events that are coming up. But before I start that, JT, I want to say that you will be back on the Spoils of Akron podcast in some capacity. This has been an amazing chat, interview. Get to know you. You know, we've met before in person once or twice, I think.
Once or twice.
But we've been Facebook friends for longer than that. And I think it's just through our contacts and the people we know. And, you know, from those first couple of times getting to sit down, not even getting to sit down, but just like saying hello to you.
Right.
Or remember that one time I spilled your coffee all over the room?
That was one of the more fun nights of my life.
I mean, this is, these are just like a, it was like a trailer for getting to know the real JT. And I got to tell you, I just watched the movie and I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
So I think our listeners will love it.
You are too, like, cool. You know, this, like, where were you in my circle of friends when I was like 19, 20? It's like everybody else was like off playing basketball.
I wasn't born yet.
You were three. Well, you know, that's fine. I think, you know, you and I on Facebook have a lot of mutual stalkers as well, which is really cool.
I mean, friends.
No, we've got the friends, but we've got a couple of people who are like both like, hey, how are you?
Hello.
Like, delete, delete, delete. Okay, how so that's doing? Another conversation for another time. So.
And we will continue that conversation at some point. Facebook stalkers.
Over spilled coffee.
Yes! So our own Chris Miller, I'm going to start this out. Our own Chris Miller is hosting free movie days at
Waters Park, and it will be June 26th from Friday, at Friday at 7 p.m. And I'm going to, you know, Chris, I'm going to let you talk about it because it's actually for a really cool event, so I'm going to turn the mic over to you.
Thanks, Ryan. We're doing a movie night to honor World Refugee Day. So we're going to have Nepali storytellers, some musical acts, because we were talking about the growing North Hill community. There is a growing community of Nepali and Bhutanese musicians who are fantastic. So we're going to let them showcase a few of their tunes. Then we're going to show the movie The Good Lie with Reese Witherspoon about refugee resettlement, sort of timely. And I will say the Free Akron Outdoor Movie Project, which is what I'm involved with, we have a few more really cool things coming up. So we'll tease that and some involving our very own hosts of this podcast. So
What? Way cool.
So like Chris said, that is
this Friday.
This Friday. I went to the next page on my iPad. And that's this Friday. Make sure to make it out there. But also this Sunday at 1 p.m. to 4, Sunday, June 28th, at the Akron Center for Art and Music, Wandering Aesthetics, and we always love to help out Wandering Aesthetics. They are one of those people that have helped us get to where we are. They are presenting The Fundamentals of Storytelling, led by master storyteller Kyle Joza. I'm going to say I came up with that. I've always called him a master storyteller, and now they've started calling him a master storyteller. So I'm saying that originated right here, people, because you've seen Kyle tell stories before, he engages the entire audience. So if you want to learn how to tell a story, whether it's you're just telling it to some people around the water cooler, whether you're looking to perform it, or if you just want to get out and meet some awesome people, make sure to check this out. Like I said, it's this Sunday at 1 p.m. to 4 at the Akron Center for Art and Performance over on West Market. And it's going to be a really fun event and a lot of learning. You're really just going to like let it soak in and like how to do all of this. Mm-hmm. So make sure to check that out.
Mm-hmm. I just want to chime in and say that Wandering Aesthetics is one of the things that has changed in my time here. You don't have a successful city and a successful arts culture without groups like Wandering Aesthetics, and they have been a game changer in this town. I think if there's one thing I'm more jealous of than anything about people who are like in teenage to like early 20s now, it's that you've got a group like Wandering Aesthetics to walk into when you leave the house.
Haha, suck it.
And you know, so it's just so awesome, and I think you know Akron has benefited so much from having them around. So go check them out. They're a great, great, great group.
Right. This is hard to do, to play and talk at the same time. But I'm just going to stop. You know what? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this episode of the Spoils of Akron podcast. Make sure to look up all that stuff that JT talked about his shows coming up, and Patsy Cline. Make sure to check us out on iTunes, Instagram, Facebook, however you're listening to this, our website on Podbean. I'm going to put my ukulele down because I can't do that. As always, the Spoils of Akron podcast works in partnership with the Akron Digital Media Center, run right here out of the Akron Public Library. Our own Chris Miller right here, who runs the boards, he flips the ones and twos. He is the editor-in-chief for The Akronist, which is an amazing website. Make sure to check that out. And I'm going to say this one more time. JT, thank you for coming on. You were an amazing guest, and you will be back on the Spoils of Akron podcast.
Thank you, Ryan. This has been a unique and really awesome privilege, and you are awesome as well. So go us. Fist bump, please.
Fist bump.
All right, there we go.
All right, and remember, people, keep it an Akron day.